Good evening, and thank you for joining us. I'm Taryn, welcoming you to this live event. Tonight, Senator Judy Schwenk of the 11th Senate District will take your calls and questions on the new state budget and other related issues. If you would like to ask a question this evening, please press star 3 on your keypad to participate. Again, if you'd like to ask a question live, please just press star 3 on your keypad. Without any further delay, here's the Senator.
Oh, thank you, Taryn, and good evening, everyone. This is State Senator Judy Schwenk, and welcome to this telephone town hall for all of my constituents within the 11th Senate District. I'd like to thank everyone who's taking time out of their busy schedule to participate on tonight's call. Whether you ask a question or just prefer to listen to the conversation, I really appreciate your engagement. I wish everybody wanted to know how our state government is working and information on the budget and any other issues. There's a lot of things that we can talk about tonight, and I welcome your questions for sure. But, and you need to know this, we're going to say it a lot, but if you'd like to ask a question at any time during our discussion, press star 3 on your phone. And as I just said, we're going to start off talking about the state budget, but we can go into other things that are impacting our community as well. So starting with the budget, why don't I just give you a little rundown here. As you might know, I serve on the Appropriations Committee, so I get the opportunity to participate in budget hearings, which start almost immediately after the governor releases his budget in the beginning of February, the first Tuesday of February. So we go through a series of hearings with many of the departments. This year was a little bit different. We didn't do all of them, which was kind of disappointing to me, but nevertheless, we did get the numbers from all of the different departments. So once that process has begun, we have plenty of time, and our deadline is June 30th by the state constitution. We're supposed to have a budget done by June 30th. We didn't quite make the deadline this year. We were a few days late, but nevertheless, we weren't as late as we have been in the past. You remember last year it went into November, and for me that was just a non-starter because it was devastating to so many different agencies, nonprofits, schools that depend on state funding to pay their bills. Some of them had to borrow money, so it wasn't a good situation. So what did the budget look like? Well, the budget consists of several parts. First of all, there's all the allocations for the different departments and funds. But then there's also something called codes bills. This year there was a fiscal code and an education code. And what those codes do is they incorporate, just different issues. They literally take sometimes legislation that somebody introduced, and they write this into this long bill. This year, each one of them is about 30 or 40 pages long. And they're full of, all kinds of different issues. They're not unknown to us, so most of it's not a surprise. But we certainly, you take a look at that, and you vote yes or you vote no, and you're voting on a whole lot of things, some of which you don't like and some of which you do. But in terms of the budget numbers themselves, it was about $50.8 billion for the budget. And, some of the things that were in there, one thing that you need to know is about 80% of that budget is spent on education and healthcare. So education is 42% of the budget, and human services, not healthcare, is about 39%. So that's where a lot of our spending is going. It's not necessarily going, to some of the other programs, initiatives like natural resources or the environment or, some of the programs that we would like to invest in more, economic development, for example. But that's mandated spending that we absolutely have to have. So, in education, we have continued to fund to help restore equality to school districts in terms of funding, which we had gotten away from as a state. We are putting money into roads and bridges. About $775 million will be going to that. Child care funding is something you've heard me talk a lot about. We're going to be giving more funds to child care workers so we can get them to actually stay employed and do the jobs we need to help educate our children. And another one that I'll talk about and then just end on that and start taking your questions is that there were retirees that were not subject to the an act in 2002, Act 9, which guaranteed cost of living increases to pensions. So think of some of your retired school teachers, you know, from back when maybe you were a kid, or police officers, or firefighters, municipal firefighters, not volunteers, but state employees as well as education employees had not seen an increase for over 20 years. Some of, and remember, many of them were making salaries at the time when they started, maybe about $7,000 or $8,000 a year. I know that for a fact because when I started in education, I was making $8,000. So this gives you a sense of, you know, people were really in dire straits. So I was really happy that this year we were able to give that increase to those retirees. Many of them have not even lived to see this, which is a disappointment to me. But we're certainly trying to rectify the issue now. So that gives you a start on the budget. I'll talk a bit about more about it as we go through questions, too. So, Karen, if there's any questions, maybe we can start with that. And remember, star 3 if you want to ask a question.
Absolutely. Our first caller is Viola. Viola, you are live.
Yes. Hi, Marla. Hi. I just want to know why something can't be done about these call, these roaming calls. I mean, it's getting out of hand. They call me 9:30 at night. They call me early in the morning, 7 days a week. And I think there should be something done about that.
I don't disagree with you. And actually, within one of those codes bills was a more legislation addressing those robocalls that we receive at all hours of the day and night. There have been many proposals. There have been many initiatives that have been tried. The Attorney General works on this diligently, to be honest with you. One of the problems that they always tell me when I ask them, why can't we fix this, it's driving people crazy, is that many of these calls initiate overseas, so they are not within our jurisdiction, and we're not able to stop them. And in addition to that, it seems as soon as we put a fix in place, the scammers, you know, the callers manage to find a way to outmaneuver the fixes that we put in place. I hear what you say. There are do not call lists. I don't know if you're on it or not, but I know the do not call list is not foolproof. In fact, it's not at all. So we'll keep trying, but there is some legislation that we can get more information out about it. Thank you.
All righty, our next caller is Shirley. Shirley, you're live.
Hi, Shirley.
Hello, I'm calling. I just wanted to know if you guys are proposing anything to help the elderly as far as property taxes, school taxes. It's really, when you're on a fixed income, it's really eating up a big portion of our income. I just want to know, is there anything you're doing or could do to help us?
I hear you, Shirley. I saw my tax bill, too, and I know exactly what you're saying, and depending upon where you live, the numbers differ. So there are a number of things that people talk about. One of them is property tax elimination, which would mean we would have to tax other things in order to pay for school funding. You know, the state is doing more, as I told you at the beginning of the call, but not enough. So our local school districts, you know, have to pay their bills. They have salaries. Most of their costs are associated with personnel. So they have to deal with those costs. And, of course, then our property tax rise. These proposals, ever since I've been in the Senate, there have been different proposals which I've supported for property tax elimination. But it means other taxes are going to have to go up. Currently, there is a proposal which troubles me, quite frankly, because not only does it tax some other things like, you know, candy, gum, clothing, a few other things. I may not be totally right on all of it, but there are things that we don't pay taxes on yet. But the part that bothers me is it will tax your pension. That is something that has never happened in Pennsylvania before. So if you're a senior citizen and one of your issues is living on a fixed income, or if you have a pension, to have to pay taxes on that may not make this situation better for you. I'll keep people posted on what happens on that, but for right now, that's not the right proposal as far as I'm concerned. What we have done, though, is for people who qualify in terms of their income, you're probably familiar with it, the Property Tax and Rent Rebate Program. And this year, more than 511,000 people, seniors, are actually getting this. And they're receiving over $314 million. So we are using, some of the gaming funds to help support that. What I would support is to continue to expand that program so that the income levels reach more people. I think that's the way we really need to address senior property taxes. Pardon me. I hope that helps.
Are you ready? All right.
Yeah, I'm ready for the
quick reminder, if you would like to ask the question and join into the conversation, please just press *3 on your keypad at any point during this call. Senator, our next caller is Dale. Dale, you're live.
Hello.
Hello, Judith.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. This is actually Dale and David.
Nice to talk to you. Yeah, hi, Dale. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. So David's going to ask a question. I saw in the news today that Berks Arts Council is folding. Do you have any insight into that? What the cause? Is there anything at the state level that has caused this to happen?
Dale, that was a shock to me, too. I read it just like you did. I didn't know, that was happening. I'm trying to find out the reasons behind it. I know where to find you so I can let you know, and I assume there'll be more information out about it in the future. But it certainly seems like it might have something to do with the money allocated to the council. But we'll see. We'll try to find out more. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm sorry, Senator. I believe his call was dropped.
Okay. Let's take our next caller then, Taryn.
All righty. Our next caller is Poilo. Excuse me if I mispronounced that. But you're live.
Hi. Poilo, are you there? Looks like it dropped, Taryn. Do we have another one?
All righty. Yep. Our next caller will try Philip. Philip, you're live.
Hi, Philip.
Hi, Judy. Thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
My question is, many Pennsylvanians are crossing into neighboring states to purchase legal cannabis. How should Pennsylvania respond to the tax revenue that we're losing and it's leaving our state?
There's so many issues associated with that, and I'm glad you brought it up, Philip. That would be one of the things that I would talk about. And this year in the budget, we did not address legalizing recreational cannabis, and that could be a revenue source. Although the longer we wait, my understanding is the less revenue Pennsylvania is going to be able to garner because there's just so much of it available. And many people, of course, might be using the medical cannabis program to access the product, too. We need to address this. We need to find the legislative fix that will work. My concerns will be and continue to be, how do we keep this out of the hands of kids so that they, you know, in their formative years are not using this product, which it's certainly understood that it is something that can impact their growth and development, certain mental health issues for sure. I think the other piece of this that we have to address is decriminalizing marijuana use. Maybe even first doing that, so that people who are using it are not getting records or not getting penalized in a way that in some, you know, impacts their life and their ability to make a living. I do think that at least in the next year, and I know you've heard this before, but I really do think we're going to get this addressed probably in the next session, because it's yes, we're leaving revenue on the table, but even more importantly, we need to know how to regulate this. I'm concerned too about people driving under the influence and using marijuana while they're driving, whatever it may be, particularly in the workforce, perhaps people using the drug and staying in their system at work. So drug testing is difficult. We've got to figure some of these things out. Other states have done it. And I believe Pennsylvania is going to need to get this done sooner rather than later. Thank you.
All righty. Our next caller is Salita. Salita, you're live.
Salita. Hi, Judy Schlenk. I want to first thank you for your unlimited dedication to the community and how you service us and fight for us on a daily basis. My question is, there are a lot of agencies, and I work for one, that are having crucial services that benefit the community, like housing, like job and readiness, employment. A lot of these services are being defunded and then turning around, and then the people that provided these services and dedicated their time to the community to provide these services are now unemployed. Is there any support, any information you have for these local agencies that have dedicated decades in providing these services and not only providing these services, but also helps the economy and helps people that, you know, were facing homelessness or trying to better their life? Is there any information on how we're going to support these agencies moving forward? I know there's several of them, and there's a lot of people that are unemployed now that did provide these services for people, and now they're in the same exact position that the people they serviced were in. Now they're in those positions. So I'm just trying to see if anybody's talking about supporting these agencies, trying to figure out new ways so that they can continue providing these services to the community and so forth.
We absolutely need these agencies that provide information to individuals on housing, social workers who help with employment or gaining health care. The problem is, and I think we need to recognize this, the reason that this is happening is that many of these agencies depended upon federal funding. And what's happened to the federal funding? It's been slashed. Not just cut, but slashed. I hear from many of these agencies that talk about programs, whether it's dealing with homelessness or whether it's dealing with food security insecurity, access to food or to health care benefits. All of this is a trickle down from federal funding that has been reduced. As you know, for example, on what we used to call food stamps or SNAP, that has been cut, and people who used to access this can't, or if they can, they have to reapply, they have to recertify that they're eligible, which isn't a problem, but many of these folks, it is a problem because they really don't have the wherewithal to be able to do this. And I hear this from agencies, that people just give up, and as a result, they're not getting the services, the food that they need. How are we going to fund these things? The state has tried, certainly, to step in where we have to or where we can. But we're limited in our budget as well. But this is a question to ask our congresswomen, our U.S. senators, to talk to them seriously about how this is impacting our community. That's where the problem starts. I know that's not the answer maybe you want to hear, but we'll do whatever we can to support agencies, but that the state is limited to. And we have had funds cut as well. So it's a good question. Thank you.
All righty. Before we go to our next caller, just a quick reminder, star 3 on your keypad to ask a question and join in on the conversation. Again, just press star 3 on your keypad. Our next caller is... Yes, Senator.
No, I was just going to say, maybe I have to talk for a moment about skill machines, because that was another, right? That was another issue that was discussed in the budget but didn't get resolved. And it's actually something that we're under a deadline as a state government to fix. The state Supreme Court ruled that those skill machines, you know, that you see in pizza parlors or convenience shops, in bars, and also in, you know, some of our, you know, organizations like American Legions and so forth, some of those machines are considered now illegal. The state Supreme Court has given the state a pass, but the deadline is October 13th. And we don't have a way of figuring out how to make those machines legal, how to regulate them, then they're really going to either be confiscated by law enforcement, or they're going to have to be simply shut down, unplugged from the wall, and, you know, kept from operating. Now, there again, just like the caller talked about before, this could be a source of income. The rub is how much of an income and how are they charged? And there's a number of proposals that are out there, which the legislature hasn't been able to figure out what's the best way to go, whether it's a per-machine fee, you know, maybe like $500 to $5,000 for a fee to operate a machine, or it's a tax. Right now, the casinos where, you know, you use a slot machine, the tax rate is 52%. That's high. A middle ground was proposed as a possibility for these machines. And certainly a lot of the folks, the businesses, and the organizations that have these machines are relying on them for income. They've been a great source of income. So somehow we have to find that balance, and we've got to do it by October 13th. But here's the problem, unless, you know, some of these committees, and I don't serve on the gaming committee, so I wouldn't necessarily be involved in this, but some of the leadership within the Senate and the House and the governor's office, if they don't sit down at the table and figure this out, this is going to happen. And the Senate, for example, does not come back into session until September 28th. There's not many days between September 28th and October 13th. So this needs to be worked out sooner rather than later. But I thought I'd give you an update on where that is right now. As far as I know, nothing's happening. Go ahead, Terry, and we can take a call then.
Alrighty, we had an online question submitted from Betsy asking, where is Pennsylvania with SR 211, with direct legislative budget and finance committee to conduct a comprehensive study about the Pennsylvania Municipalities Planning Code?
Oh, Senate, that was my Senate resolution, by the way, so I was very proud that that was able to be passed. Some of you might know that my background is in land use. At one point in my career, I served as the director of 10,000 Friends of Pennsylvania, which is a statewide organization that looks at how we use our land and how we can be more effective at preserving land and controlling sprawl. And it's an organization that still exists and is doing a great job. But at any rate, one of the things that I learned in that job is that the state has something called the Municipal Planning Code, which is sort of the Bible of land use, if you will. And it regulates all of, you know, the ways that communities can actually use their land or can respond to land use proposals from developers or whoever it may be. And remember, in Pennsylvania, for the most part, there's very few counties that actually do all of the land use planning for a community. Every single community, whether it's Muhlenberg Township, which I'm sitting in right now in my office, or the city of Reading, they each have to develop their own land use planning through zoning, through ordinances that help to regulate how they use the land. So that resolution to review the municipal planning code passed, and it didn't have to go over to the House. It passed the Senate, and it has now become law. So what that means is that committee will take a look at the municipal planning code, and they'll bring together, this isn't just, you know, a group of bureaucrats. They'll bring together experts, local township officials, for example, municipal planners, developers, builders, you know, all of the people who have some sort of a stake in how land is used, and farmers, for example, as well, because of agricultural land. And they will go, you know, page by page through the MPC, the Municipal Planning Code, and make recommendations to the legislature. All they can do is make regulations. Then legislators have to introduce legislation to implement those different ideas that they come up with. It's not going to be, you know, something that's just going to become state law because they said so. It actually has to be passed by the legislature, both the Senate and the House, and go to the governor's desk before it becomes law. So that's the status of that. The committee is actually now convening and organizing the panels that will be looking at this. And they're supposed to have a report by law within 180 days. But I have said to them, I've met with them since this, that I would rather have a really good report and do this in taking their time to make sure that we get the right ideas forward. So that's the status. Thanks for asking.
All righty. Thank you, Senator. Our next caller is John. John, you're live.
Hi, John.
I'm sorry that I couldn't see you in person, but I have a formal proposal that I'm working on to introduce legislation to increase the minimum liability insurance for autos in Pennsylvania. It's $15,000. It's been on the books since 1974. To put it in perspective, you could get a Dodge Challenger for $2,500 new. In, you know, so $15,000 liability in 1974 dollars was at least six times that amount. What I'm suggesting is that I realize that we have to balance it against people who are poor, who need to operate a car for a job or a family or whatever, but it's seriously out of date. And when you co-sponsor this with maybe Yohani or one of the local representatives or someone else, another state senator, there should be a mechanism where you would automatically get an increase for inflation periodically, and that would only not go into effect if the legislature said no, it's too much, and they have to act against it and vote with a majority to keep it from, you know, continuing to increase. Now, I was hit by an SUV on December 3rd. I broke my pelvis. I was crossing the street, South 7th Street in Reading, and I broke my pelvis, my femur, my fibula, and my tailbone. And what really saved me is that I had, I spent 27 in trauma, which really only 20 of them were unnecessary because my insurance provider, my health insurance provider was, you know, taking up to 30 days. They took a full 20 days to get a rehab that met their price point. But I was medically cleared in a week. You know, I went into surgery. The next day, it was very painful, but fortunately, I didn't hit my head, didn't break my ribs, you know, didn't scratch my teeth. And when the woman who passed the character test said, oh, my God, are you all right? You know, of course, I had just been up on her hood, but I did a beautiful belly flop on South 7th Street, you know, and the beer belly kept me from hitting my head. So that saved my life. So because I was able to tell her, call 911. because she didn't know what to do. But but she did pass the character test. She stopped and, you know. And
Let me interrupt you, John. I appreciate you bringing this forward. I really do. I don't want to cut you short, but this isn't the first time that I've heard this. And this actually has been proposed. And it hasn't ever gone anywhere, unfortunately. But it is, we'll be starting a new legislative session after December 31st. And so if you will get that to me, in some kind of a written form, I have staff that are available to all of us here to help write legislation. We'll certainly take a look at it and see what we can do to move this forward. You're right, though. You're absolutely, it's, any complaint I have about being in the legislature is we just don't get enough stuff done. And I don't understand why, because we don't, but we don't.
But thank you. All right. Ready for the next caller, Senator?
Yes.
All right. Our next caller is Rebecca. Rebecca, you are live.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hello. Hi, Judy. How are you doing?
Great.
This is very interesting. It's been a long while since I heard a town hall. This is wonderful. I'm learning a lot. I just saw in the news or online in the news that several counties in Pennsylvania are being pressured. I don't know that they signed yet, but they have been pressured by 16 data centers, and these are in southwestern part of our state. But I also read different things about BERT, that yes, we were going to get one, and no, there was resistance, and we're not. Can you address the BERT County one at least, or can you comment on where we at with all these data centers, and is the governor holding the line on it? It seemed from what I read that he is, but what you tell us that. And then if there's time, if you could also comment on another kind of center, which is the immigration one that we did have here anyway in Berks, and it was closed, but then there was talk of bringing it back. That's another thing I saw in the paper. So can you comment on those, please?
Let's start with the data centers, and I'm glad you brought that up, Rebecca. It was on my notes to talk about this, too. We could do 3 hours of a town hall here. So here is the situation right now. Data centers are being proposed all over the Commonwealth, even here in Berks County, yes. But in some counties, like up in the northeastern corner, there are multiple proposals. It's mind-boggling. And these are hyperscale. These are a large, buildings taking up numbers of acres with, some of the attendant issues that these centers have. They use a lot of power. They need water to help cool, some of the equipment that they use. And they also make noise as a result of that, too. At least the models that we have seen or have heard about. I'm doing my homework on this. I have been to a number of hearings, and not partisan hearings, by the way. I even attended one that was sponsored by the federal banks, just to try to get information. I've listened to people from Virginia who have also, dealt with this situation. Depending on which side you sit on this, it's either a great thing because of the tax benefits, or it is an environmental disaster and something that people simply don't want in their communities. So here's the situation in Pennsylvania. There have been a number of bills introduced, honestly, almost all of them in the House, and they have passed, but they have not been taken up in the Senate because the majority in the Senate is simply not interested in addressing the issue. So, for example, there are moratoriums everywhere from 3 years to 180 days have been proposed as legislation, but none of that has moved at all. In the meantime, like I said before, every community that gets faced with an application for one of these has to deal with it individually unless they're involved in some sort of regional planning agreement, which a lot of communities are. So that's they have to deal with this on their own, and I believe they need time to do that, whether it's 3 years or a year. But I like what New York has done. where they've implemented a law where it's at least a year, so the communities have time to, you know, to look at this, to put in place the ordinances, to ask for the community benefit agreements that they'd like to see in their community. Here in Berks, we already have some data centers. A lot of people don't know that. There's at least three or four, but they're not those giant warehouse size buildings. They're smaller and they don't have the environmental impact. You wouldn't even know it, that they exist in our communities. However, the one that's being proposed that I'm aware of, and it's not actually, there are no plans yet. There's actually nothing to consider. That would be in Kumru Township at the site of the former Titus station, where MedEd had a coal-generating electric plant. So it's a, you know, it's a large acreage, and it's a vacant. So that is the site that has been considered. And Kumru Township is doing their homework. They're putting in place the the ordinances that they need to protect their community. But nothing, again, there's been no formal proposal put forward, but they're anticipating it. So that's the only one that I know of being proposed right now in Berks County. But I don't just care about Berks County. I think we have to look at the whole state and understand where we fit in all of this. There are places in Pennsylvania where they welcome them. Homer City, which is Indiana County and is a community that has huge coal generating electric plant, huge. And they are actually building some of the hyperscale data centers because the coal plant closed down. To them, that seems to be an economic development that they approve of and that they want. This generates jobs too, so there's certainly a lot of labor unions and others that are interested in seeing these developments happen. But we have to look at the long term, not just the short term. So that's a bit about the data centers, but I hope to be learning more and providing more information. You asked about the ICE centers. That's the Department of Homeland Security centers. They have bought two warehouses, one in northern Berks and one up in Schuylkill County. And they were proposing to house immigrants there that would be, waiting to be adjudicated and likely deported as well. I am happy, I'll be right up front about it, that the government has dropped their plans for this. They were sites that were never appropriate for something like this. The infrastructure wasn't there, the water, the electric, the emergency services, the whole thing wasn't ready for something like that. Furthermore, I didn't want to see this here in our county. So that's where that stands right now. And I think there that was, the state, particularly the governor, who got the Department of Environmental Protection as well as labor and industry involved in stopping, and making sure that the feds had to address these issues. They couldn't. So they dropped, it's just too expensive, and they dropped it. I'm talking a lot here, so I'm going to stop now. But certainly if there are more questions, I am happy to answer them. Thank you. Thank you for bringing it up, though.
All righty. Our next caller, Senator, is Marcia. Marcia, you're live.
Hi, Marcia.
Good evening, Senator Swank, and thank you for your service to the community. I'm bringing up an issue that I've discussed both when I was on City Council and I think also with you individually, is the public health risk for consumer fireworks, which many years ago was legalized to expand the availability of fireworks to citizens for personal use. And what we've seen happen in my neighborhood, I don't even feel safe being in my home on the 4th of July. Unfortunately, the volume of the fireworks that are set off, the fact that they're hitting houses, even though they are illegal in the city of Reading, the police don't have the capacity to respond, neither does the fire department. And I wanted to see whether the state legislator was ready to revisit the decision they made many years ago to put a control on at the state level to help municipalities with something that they're not able to really address fully. And I am concerned. I'm seeing that there are many health risks, emergency room visits, homes that are damaged or set on fire, and it's just a disaster that keeps unfolding. Fortunately, it only happens around the 4th of July, but I still think it needs to be addressed.
Marcia, I don't disagree with you. And, you know, I can remember before the current legislation that we have in place to address this was done, I could count on a visit from the Reading Fire Department fire marshal every July 5th or 6th to come in and talk to me about the problems that the city faced as a result of this. And I can remember being near the city where literally there was smoke in the air because there were so many fireworks that were being exploded. The legislation that was put in place was considered a compromise. I did not vote for it. I voted against it. But the idea was that communities like Reading could limit it, they could make it illegal, or they could limit the timing. They could do all of these things to prevent this from happening. But the problem is people can buy them, and they buy them, and they take them home, and they detonate them. And you're right, there aren't enough police, there's not enough law enforcement to be able to stop all of this. So the problem isn't solved. But what it did do, and again, I wasn't in support of this, the revenue, there's a tax put on these, and the revenue has been used to fund volunteer fire companies. And that's generated, when it first started, it was a couple million dollars, and now that has increased. I don't know exactly where it's at, but I think it's somewhere around $9-10 million. And that money goes out in grants. So kind of, I hate to say this, bought the silence of, you know, a lot of legislators and others who were really against these, you know, high-powered fireworks. But that's where the situation is. And I honestly don't think it's going to be revisited. I wish I could say it was, but I don't think it will be. But thank you for asking.
All right.
Again, everybody, start.
Right,
thank you. Go ahead,
Tim. Our next caller is Dale. Dale, you're live.
Hi, Bill. You there,
Bill? Dale, are you there?
Dale.
All right, we'll try another caller in 1 second. All right, our next caller is Diane. Diane, you're live.
Hi, Diane. Hi, Senator. Thank you very much for your service. We appreciate what you do. My call today has to do with the recent article in the Reading Eagle yesterday regarding long-term care. There's a program that Washington State has started to fund long-term care insurance, and it's really quite an impressive feat to try to do something like that. And I'm wondering if there are any movement in Pennsylvania to do anything similar to kind of help our elderly deal with long-term care costs, which, of course, we have such a large elder population in Pennsylvania, and it's only getting more.
I'm glad you caught that article. I read it too, Marcia. I thought that was interesting. In Washington State, they have created their own long-term care insurance program, which is insurance to help care, you know, if you need to go into a nursing home or you need an attendant or somebody, it would help to fund this. If long-term care insurance was a big thing back in the 80s and 90s, but it got so expensive, and many of the companies that offered it actually went out of business. And yet, you're right, a lot of us are going to find that we need some kind of assistance. As much as we'd like to think we won't, it's going to happen for many of us. So it seems like an idea worth pursuing. I actually cut the article out, and I'm hopeful, to take it back to our insurance commissioner and ask him about it, what the possibilities may be for Pennsylvania. While we're on that subject, I do want to mention in the budget, one of the things that we were able to pass was an increase in the funding to nursing homes, just specifically so that they can pay staff higher salaries. they have their reimbursements have stayed very, very low, the nursing homes, and as a result, they have not been able to hire the staff that they want or, you know, that skilled labor that they need and to pay them appropriately. So it's a modest increase, but it did go up this year, but we have more work to do. But again, thank you. Thank you for bringing it up about the long-term insurance issue.
Our next caller is Daryl. Daryl, you're live.
Dwayne, thank you for taking my call. My question is, has anyone proposed anything? You know, our housing is terrible here in Pennsylvania, you know, for, you know, the homeless or, you know, unhoused or just low income. Has anybody looked at the idea of tiny homes? I've seen in Oregon where they have a couple programs that actually did well for transitional housing, homeless to get back on your feet, or just those trying to find something affordable. Is that something that Pennsylvania will maybe look at?
I don't see any reason why Pennsylvania wouldn't. What it would take is for, you know, an agency or a nonprofit group to come forward with a proposal, you know, it to the state housing and finance agency, or to look to local governments that have federal funds for, you know, dealing with homelessness and low, very low income housing, or individuals with mental health problems that don't do well in apartment buildings or in congregate housing. I think it's something worth, certainly worth pursuing. And I can remember that at least a year or two, the coalition to end homelessness in Berks County was looking at that. I don't know where that is now, but it's an intriguing idea, and certainly it's something that we should think about. You know, some other things that have been done that a lot of people don't realize, it's not perfect, but for example, having parking lots where people who are living in their cars, and not that I approve of this, can safely stay there, and they are, you know, not, you know, subject to being harassed or, you know, to being targeted by criminals or, you know, something of that nature. You know, those are the kinds of things that we're looking at to try to deal with the problem. Our numbers are increasing, unfortunately. Another thing that we've done recently is to, you know, create a wagon with portable showers that can be moved from site to site. The project is called Refresh Berks, and we were able with some state funding to help get it off the ground, but it still needs, you know, funding to keep it operating. But these are the kinds of things that hopefully, you know, get people to the point where they can start thinking about how they might look for permanent housing. But we've got to make more opportunities to be able to do that too. A lot of work to be done. For sure. Good question. Thank you.
Our next caller is Eleanor. Eleanor, you're live.
Hi, Eleanor.
How are you?
Great.
That's good. Senator Frank, the reason I was calling, I listened to your message yesterday and so forth, but, you know, downtown Reading, they want to improve it. They bring it back alive. Have people come downtown and enjoy themselves, which they do at some of the events that they have. But there are a lot of people that just sit up on Penn Street, and I know there's a lot of homeless people that are up there. But then there's those people that sit at the bus stops. They're not waiting for the bus. They're just sitting up there, and they have the music. People drive down in their cars, and they have the music blasting out loud. Now, how are we going to have people that want to come to Reading and enjoy themselves just to walk down Penn Street and all this is going on? I mean, I think we need more policemen to walk the beat of the city of Reading during the daytime to see what's going on, because I know they see, and they pass them in their cars. The police cars pass the cars, and they still have the music going on. I worked at Alvernia for 15 years, and I was administrative assistant, and everybody knew professors that they hired. They always said to them, don't move into Reading. Now Alvernia is downtown Reading, but, you know, one lady, one of the professors even put on her door for her art class, they were going to the Goggle Works. Be careful when you're going into Reading. And I was very offended. I've lived in Reading all my life. I know Reading has changed. People have changed. I mean, I grew up here. I'm 71 years old. And I grew up here, and I remember a different Reading. But
yeah.
When you got so many diversities here, and things are different, you know.
Yeah.
And I just think that they should emphasize more on taking care of, they want more people to come to Reading except for these games and whatever they have, you know, at the Santana Center. They need
mm-hmm.
to do more for downtown Reading to let people know that it's safe. I tell people all the time, there are cameras everywhere. And I tell people
that's
this,
right.
So they're always talking about Reading, Reading, Reading. Reading is not a bad place to live. People make Reading bad. It's not the city. But I just think, you know, when you're riding down Penn Street, you don't want to hear all that blasting music on Penn Street. Everybody comes down, not everybody, but the people that come down Penn Street, they got their music blasting. You can't
even
hear
what, Eleanor? I hear you. You know what, though? I hear from people my age and your age that they talk about how they used to cruise Penn Street. Do you remember that? In the car. And they would play music, you know. It's different generations, different things.
What you're saying, it was different for you than it was for me because I am black. We couldn't
mm-hmm.
cruise down Penn Street.
Yeah.
At that time.
I wasn't doing it. I didn't live here. I didn't grow up.
I'm just
hearing what people say. But
I remember when the Ku Klux Klan used to march down Penn Street. You know.
That I don't like to hear. But, Eleanor, let me stop you for a minute.
I
agree with you. We really do have a wonderful city, and improvements are being made, and it is not unsafe. I totally agree with you. I fight that reputation all the time. But you're right. The music blasting, things like that. But I hear that out in Warren Missing, too. It's not just in Reading, necessarily. But I do applaud the work that's being done in the city to help make improvements and to bring more businesses back. You know, the project that will happen at 5th and Penn. There's progress is slow, but it is being made. The one thing that I will say, though, I wish that we could have maintained the improvement district, which I thought when they had ambassadors and they had, you know, now I know the city does this. But it was, I think, a little more intensive when they're actually, you know, business owners were helping to pay for it. But that, you know, that is something that I know the city is working on, the mayor as well as city council. They can answer this question far better than I do. But I patronize businesses in the city. I go there all the time, and I will continue to and encourage people. And we got, like you're saying, we have issues, but these are things that we can fix. And hopefully we will. But thank you for bringing it up. I really appreciate it. And thank you, too, about the issue. You know, I heard stories about the cruising. I didn't grow up in Reading. I didn't go to high school here. But I didn't realize that that was also, you know, not for everybody, which is not a good thing either. Times have changed, haven't they? Thank you. Thanks for the call and the comments.
All right, Senator, are you ready for another caller?
I am so ready.
All right. Karen, you're live.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call, Senator. Hi.
Sure.
I was doing some research on my computer into some of the state Senate districts, specifically
mm-hmm.
for Berks County, and I've noticed that somewhere between 17% and 20% are registered either they're not Democrat or Republican. So we have an average of maybe 18% of our population that's registered who aren't able to vote during the primaries. And I'm a judge of elections, and
mm-hmm.
I see people coming in, they really want to vote, and they just didn't understand that they can't vote in the primaries. And I think it's disenfranchising 18% of our voters from voting in the primaries, and I was wondering if there's any hope of that changing.
I think that there is, and I totally agree with you. It is wrong that independents cannot vote in the primaries. They pay for these elections through their taxes. It is disenfranchising to, and there is legislation that has been proposed that does not move forward. It doesn't move out of committee, which, you know, which must do, and then move to the floor. So this is something that I'm hoping in the next session that we will address. Look, voting issues are front and center right now, and you likely realize this as a judge of election. I just recently read tonight before I went online here that President Trump is asking the Supreme Court to make mail-in balloting, with the exception, I think, of, you know, the way we used to do it, folks that for reasons of health could not vote or disability. Mail-in voting is something that so many of us have come to rely upon, and that is an issue that I think all of us have to be paying attention to, that, you know, something might be taken away from us that is our right to vote. And our duty to vote as well. So yes, I agree with you on the independents being able to vote in primaries. I'm a co-sponsor on that legislation, and I'll certainly vote for it as soon as I get the chance to do it. Thanks for asking.
All right, Senator, I think that was our last call.
Okay, well, I'm glad to really field all these questions. I want to tell everybody, you know, before we finish up here, I would love to do an in-person town hall, but I know how busy people are. And this gives you an opportunity. You don't have to leave your house or work or your car, and you can listen in or you can call and ask questions. So I appreciate all of you that did participate tonight. And I'll also say that, we will be holding events in the fall. We will have live town halls as well as other events coming up. So, you know, look for notices about that. And just remind you that you always have the opportunity to email or to send a letter or to call. We answer our calls. We make sure that we do. I mean, I know things slip through the cracks. Some of you are probably saying, well, you never call me back. But we do our best and really try to, you know, address the issues that folks are facing. There's some other things that we, you know, could have talked about tonight. Transit, for example, I know some people had some questions about that. Transit was not funded in this budget. So BARTA, as well as SEPTA, which is, you know, the Philadelphia system, did not get extra money as a result of this budget process. There were some things that, you know, just didn't happen, which is, you know, very, very concerning in the budget. Nevertheless, it wasn't just a question of getting it done. We did implement some new things, some of the things I'm proud of. We were able to offer funding, $10 million, to some of our farmers, including in Berks County, who lost all of their fruit crops because of a frost that we had in late April. We were able to continue conservation grants as well as ag innovation grants that, you know, will help support some of our food processing industry here in Berks County. We were able to address some of the issues related to waste, food waste. That's a problem that, you know, certainly we have in spreading things like sewage sludge or biosolids, as they're also called, some of it which might have some animal, you know, parts in it because they've been taken out of slaughterhouse waste. And, you know, I've dealt with that personally as well in terms of helping communities with it. So a lot of things were in this budget, and I'd love to talk with you about them further, but I sure appreciate all of your questions tonight. You were a great audience, and remember, we are here. Enjoy your evening and enjoy the rest of the summer. And let's hope for some rain. We need it. Thank you, folks.